Wine is unlike anything else that I can think of.
Sometimes with all the glitz and glamour of Napa, we forget this whole thing is based on families growing grapes, you know?
Potentially, this is a fantastic year, but anything can change on a dime, right?
And everything's good in life, you just have to make a natural judgment, not be too tricky in your mind. I like it, I don't like it.
Davis himself thinks that it's kind of a big load of hooey. People probably use more than maybe two or three descriptors for a wine. He just thinks they're just making it up.
I kind of fired myself. I mean, I couldn't be a one-man operation forever.
There's always something to do. There's replanting, there's barrels, there's maintenance.
Because so many people use mobile bottling lines right now, and everything has to come, the labels, the corks, everything has to come together at the same time and be there when the truck shows up.
Being able to grow up in wine, you have this passion and love for wine and the culture of wine, and everything else sort of pales in comparison.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 238. This week we feature Sarah Crowe of Yarra Yering Vineyards in Victoria, Australia.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Continuing with our series of interviews from the Australia Up Close event held in Chicago, we feature Sarah Crowe, winemaker for Yarra Yering Vineyards in Victoria, Australia. If we've learned anything, Australia is capable of great variety in winemaking, as well as some top-notch wines. Sarah has a great story, including being selected as James Halliday's 2017 Australian Winemaker of the Year. From horticulture to winemaking, she never looked back. Yarra Yering.
Yarra Yering.
Yarra Yering.
It's not the easiest thing to
say. It's not. No. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm here with Sarah Crowe, and Sarah is the winemaker for Yarra Yering Winery.
Yes.
That's a tough one to say.
It certainly is.
Where did the name come from?
Yarra is the river that runs through the valley, and Yering was an Aboriginal word for the area where the vineyard is.
Oh, okay. Well, then that explains everything.
Yeah.
It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
So how long have you been winemaker there?
4 years.
Okay. And how long have you been a winemaker?
About 16 now.
Wow. So yeah. You've been around for a while.
Yeah. Plenty more to learn, though.
Always. Don't they say in the wine business, the more you learn, the less you know, right?
Yes, that's true.
Very typical.
Yeah.
What kind of wines are you making at Yarra Yering?
We mostly make reds, only a small amount of Chardonnay, and then on our vineyard, we can grow Pinot, Shiraz, and Cabernet. So, yeah, quite a diverse range of wines.
No whites at all?
A little bit of Chardonnay and a little Semillon Sauvignon Blanc blend.
So do you have any other whites?
A tiny bit of Viognier, which we co-ferment with Shiraz, but make a little bit of straight Viognier, and some Marsan that goes into our dry red wine number two, the red blend.
Nice.
Yeah.
How long has Yarra Yering been around? Am I saying Yarra Yering?
Yes.
Now that I've got it, I'm getting cocky with it.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Just rolls off the tongue.
It does. Actually, it's not so bad after a couple of times. How long has the winery been in the business?
It was planted in 1969 by a gentleman called Dr. Bailey Carradus. So the first vintage was 1973.
Were you a wine drinker before you became a winemaker, or was there something that all of a sudden came to you saying you need to do this for a living?
Yeah, I drank a little bit of wine, but not, I wouldn't say I was a connoisseur by any stretch of the imagination. And I came into the wine industry through horticulture, so which is what I studied, and I would work in garden centres. And then I went to work in the vineyard to do some pruning and made my way into the winery for the following harvest and never went back out to the vineyard in an official capacity anyway. Now I like to swan around there and say, we need to do this, we need to do that, sure, to get to grow better fruit.
Tell everybody what to do. That's
No,
I'm just kidding. It's a teamwork thing. I mean,
it is a
business.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, I have to say, of the many winemakers I've talked to, few of them ever use the word work for me. It's always people I work with.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes a big difference. That's a very classy way to look at that.
Yeah, yeah.
When you talk about horticulture, what was your original passion? What got you into that?
I think I just liked being outdoors, really, and, nature and things like that. So I just decided when I left school that I didn't really want to be in an office or in air conditioning. I wanted to be kind of in the great outdoors, I suppose. And so that's why I went down that path, yeah.
And the part of Australia, give us a picture, north, south, where exactly you're at.
Okay, so we're just out of Melbourne, which is in Victoria, way down south. Not as far south as Tasmania, but it's kind of the bottom of Australia. So it's a cool climate as okay. well, right. Yeah.
The northern part is where it gets much warmer.
Yes, yep, and dry. So we're cool and dry, yeah.
Do you have any issues have you had any issues with rain down there in the last few years at all?
We've had ample rain in the last, four seasons, and this year was quite a challenge as far as rainfall and protecting the crop and holding onto our leaf and, keeping disease out of the vineyard. It was a really challenging season for Andrew, our vineyard manager. If he wasn't bald already, he would have lost all his hair.
Oh, I hope he gets to hear this podcast. He'll appreciate that. Yeah. Are you seeing, as a winemaker, 16 years is a good length of time in this business, although it's only 16 vintages, any major effects on Australia for climate change?
I think people who've been in the industry longer than I mean, you get both sides of the argument. People saying that it doesn't exist, and people saying, but the same people saying, but our vintages are getting earlier. So for me, particularly having recently four years ago, moved to the Yarra Valley, and, people talk about what we've been, our start of our harvest date is a good 2 weeks earlier than what it was, say, 20 years ago. So I think we are also making different styles of wine as well. But, I think it's safe to say it's pushing our growing season, making a shorter growing season.
Sure. And that's not unusual. I've heard that from other winemakers as well.
Yeah, yeah.
What about labor issues? I know here in the States, in California and some other states, they've had issues with labor shortages. How about Australia?
In what area of the...
Particularly vineyards.
Yeah. It's hard. When I started studying in Australia in 2001, I had to apply. I had to, for the university degree, I had to have letters because there were so many people applying for these positions in the universities, letters of recommendation from wineries saying they'd give me access to their vineyard, and then you were vetted to see how likely it was for you to stay because they just didn't have enough positions. And now in Australia we're actually starting to lose some of our viticulture courses, so I think it's become a problem in that there's not a lot of roles. The Australian wine industry is not necessarily growing in terms of workforce, but getting people to work in the vineyard is probably harder than it's not as fashionable as working in the winery, I suppose.
No, yeah. Not as fashionable.
Yeah.
But that also brings up another point too. I was talking to a woman who brings in labor to the United States, people who are oenologists, so they can have internship programs. But she mentioned that they're running into the millennial, the younger people of the world, are a little less willing to get their hands dirty. Are you finding that too?
Oh, it's maybe not that they don't want to get their hands dirty. It's but they want your job already. That's what I find. It's like, but also they don't expect to see me in the winery getting my hands dirty either. It's like, oh, what are you doing? It's like, I'm filling the press. And it's like, but, oh, can you do that? They come and they just think that all I do is stay in an office and write
sure.
seller notes. Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people think that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there has to be a certain amount of looking over your shoulder when you're in the business, right?
I don't worry too much about that.
No, I don't think so. So what do you like to drink? What's your favorite? And that could be any alcohol. It doesn't necessarily have to be wine.
Yeah. Well, I do drink a fair amount of gin. But when it comes to wine, I probably drink more Chardonnay than anything else.
Kind of goes up there with gin, I'd say. No. What's your favorite gin?
For my standard house gin that's always in the freezer is usually just the Tanqueray. But we have two distilleries in the Yarra Valley, and I kind of alternate between those. One's called Melbourne Gin Company, and the other one's called Four Pillars. I know Four Pillars is in the States, but I'm not sure about MGC. But yeah, I kind of alternate looking after your friends and neighbours.
Well, gin is such a very special spirit.
And they're both delicious too, so if they weren't, I wouldn't drink them.
For your time in the wine industry, and again, you've been doing this for a good long time, any kind of stories you can think of that are fun to tell or again, the wine industry can be definitely daunting.
I guess in general, the industry is full of passionate people who also like a good drink, so there's plenty of kind of fun times that we have, responsibly fun times.
Oh, of course, always, yes.
That we have, but daunting, I guess, for me, the most daunting thing I did was host my first ever winemaker's dinner, and they put a microphone in my hand, and I kind of freaked and swore because I thought it would be funny, and it wasn't. So that's my own personal tragic story, yeah.
Well, it is hard to do wine dinners because you are on the spotlight. It is your wine, and you're given a cane and a top hat, and you need to really dance.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's what I thought and what I had to do, but really all people want to know about is the wine, and if the jokes come naturally, then they come. So really, it was a very good lesson for me to learn early on. It's like, talk about what you know, talk about what you enjoy, share your passion, and everyone will have a great time. So
I think at a wine dinner, and let me know if you agree with this, is that people really want one-on-one with you, though, don't they?
Yeah, they love it when you walk around to the tables and to say hi. Yeah, unless they're on a date.
Well, that's different. But I mean, you're rock stars. Winemakers really are rock stars because you're doing something that the average person can't do. And this is a combination of science and farming and politics and all kinds of things.
Yeah. I think we're not as big a rock stars as we were maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And I love that because the base knowledge of people around wine is increasing just through them having gone to wine dinners and things in the past. So I think we used to be a lot more of a rock star than we are today because people drink a lot more wine more regularly. You know, the accessibility in all over the world in restaurants and wine bars these days means that a lot of people get experience with wine, so much so that it's not as intimidating as it used to be.
Yeah, and wine lovers have become more sophisticated, yes.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
About how many cases are you making?
About 10,000.
Okay, good. So nice, decent size.
Yeah. We do it the hard way, though.
Which would be?
So it's mostly red wine and all through 600-kilo fermenters.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fermenters, it's a lot of hands-on, it's a lot of hand plunging, it's a lot of pallet jacking fermenters around the winery, so yeah.
You have to be good with equipment.
Yeah, good on a forklift.
Yeah, forklift, that's the tool of the trade, isn't it? The number one tool of the trade. Can't operate that, you can't make it. That's really what a winemaker does, operates a forklift.
You know what I always say, if the wine industry turns to shit, I'll go and get a job as a forklift driver.
You know, that's true.
Yeah, I'm very good at it.
You have to be because it's, again, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing with a forklift, you can hurt somebody.
Yes, you can hurt somebody, but also you can damage equipment real easy. And you know, it's a big capital investment in a winery. So everything in a winery costs a lot of money. So, yeah.
Nothing easy about the wine business.
Yep.
For our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit about you as well as your winery, how would they do that online?
could go to our website, yarrayering.com. And yeah, my face will pop up.
That's good. Well, you have a nice face.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Sarah, well, I appreciate you taking the time. We have a tasting going on here very shortly. And very nice of you to come back here and chat with me.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Learn more by visiting yarrayering.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.